Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me the floor. So the work I'm about to present is entitled SU3, Landhausen interferometry with quantum triangles. I'm presenting on the SU3 Landhausen interferometry with quantum triangles. So the motivation of this work, you know, the rapid growth of the field of quantum technologies actually requires a lot of efforts from both the theorists and experimentalists. And due to the importance of quantum interferometry for high precision measurement, and then the application of quantum interactions, quantum interferences in for quantum information processing, for instance, two entangled qubits have shown to be more robust against external unwanted nuisances. And then also quantum triangles are also important for both Einstein condensates with optical lattices, and also for both Josephson junction. So this is the output of my presentation. I will tell you a little bit about what are quantum triangles. I will explain how to deal with quantum triangles, and also how quantum triangles are important for quantum technology. So without a waste of time, this is globally what we call quantum triangles. When does this occur? So this occurs generally when by varying a control parameter in an experiment, the energy diagram of the system shows these kind of interactions, kind of energy diagram. So this occurs maybe by varying the time, the flux, the chemical potential, the pressure, or the temperature. And some of the scenarios are shown here. For instance, these can occur. These situations can be observed in quantum dots, in double quantum dots, while these ones are observed into triple quantum dots. So as I was saying, if we have three energy levels, we have three ways of crossing the three energy levels. While we only have one way of crossing two levels, what happens in general is that if the three levels are, if we just have the three levels without any coupling between the levels, and then they show this, and the energy diagram appears this way, then we have a quantum triangle. If now we establish couplings between the levels, for instance, if we couple all the levels with some constant interactions, the levels with, instead of crossing, they will rather hybridize at this level crossing, giving birth to these new trajectories that are called adiabatic states. So these states will rather give this one will give this one, and this one will show this one. These dashed lines are adiabatic trajectories. These are terminologies in the field. Yeah, okay. So where do we observe quantum triangles? The most famous example is this one. An experiment conducted in 2008 by Emmanuel Bloch. So they varied this parameter, the bias, like this, and they got this schematical representation. By doing what? The experiment was performed with optical lattices by deforming the site, the atomic site in the optical lattices, such that they give rise to double well potentials. So one may, and then the model used in that experiment, the quantum model, the Hamiltonian used in that experiment, we have shown in our work that it can always be reduced to this two-mode Hubbard model. One may then ask, where is the quantum triangle in this model, as we are saying? So let's have a close look. We see that the condensates of both atoms are fastly driven, then they will follow these trajectories like this, and then we will have this small triangle, or this large triangle, yeah. If the atoms are rather slowly driven, then, as we just said, they will rather hybridize. We have this trajectory, this one for a large triangle, and this and that for a small triangle. So this is one of the examples where one can observe quantum triangles. Another example is...
Sorry, what are those
The numbers are occupations in the double wells. Yeah. Atomic occupations in the double well. Yeah.
It's not a condensate.
It's
just four bosons.
Yeah, two wells in one site. So we have four occupation here, zero here, or three here, one here. So that's the, yeah.
It's not a boson condensate. It's not a condensate.
It is.
Just three bosons.
Just four. Yeah. They performed the experiment with four per site, per atomic site. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. So thank you for. So we also have these experiment. We also observe quantum triangles in this experiment of the group of G beta in 2007. So the situation where this could be observed with double quantum dots is this situation, and the triangle is this one in this experiment. So we also have many other examples in which quantum triangles can be observed. For instance, two spins linearly driven and coupled through Ising interactions and all emerged in a bosonic bath also leads to quantum triangles. Also two entangled spins, spin 1/2 also generate that picture. Now, to deal with quantum triangles, we need to understand what happens at a given crossing. We need first of all to understand what happens only when only two levels cross. Yeah. So we therefore have this simple model of, it seems to be simple. We have two levels that cross at this crossing point, And then we have two levels, yeah, this one. The Hamiltonian describing this situation is this one. And we can notice from this that there is no coupling between the levels. So we don't expect any transitions. So the two levels are in resonance. We know that for transition to occur in a double quantum dot, the dots have to be in resonance to allow any transition. So in this situation, there is no transition. The states of the Hamiltonian are one and two that are called adiabatic states, and the eigen energies are simply this one. Now let's couple the two states and see what happens. When the two states are coupled, we have this Hamiltonian, then the two previous adiabatic states now hybridize at level crossing, rather giving rise to this avoided level crossing, and the two states now are this one and that one that are adiabatic state. So we see that the two states are out of resonance and transitions may occur between the states, of course, with respect to the quantum blockade and everything. Yeah, so, and then the eigen energies are this one. Now, the treatment, yeah, this is delta. Sorry, I have not defined the quantity, sorry. Delta is the tunnel matrix element or the coupling between the levels. While alpha is the sweep velocity. Alpha T is therefore the magnetic field within some limits. So this is what we call the Landau-Zener effect. We come to that point. What is therefore the Landau-Zener effect? The Landau-Zener effect was independently implemented by four different people. By four different people. Landau, Zener, Stuckelberg, Majorana in 1932. So they did their works independently and they finally ended up to the same result. So what is the Landau-Zener effect? To understand this effect, let's consider a spin 1/2 particle immersed in a magnetic field tuned such that the vector magnetic field takes this form. Sigma is the vector magnetic field with these two components that are Pauli matrices. We know that this induces a Zeeman effect. The Zeeman effect is simply the splitting of levels due to a magnetic field. The total Hamiltonian acquired this form. So we define these two time scales, the Zeeman transition time and the field variation time, like these two expressions. So if the condition of such transitions, this one is satisfied, then the magnetic field, the Z component of the magnetic field acquires is lesser than this quantity. Therefore, we can approximate the magnetic field in the longitudinal direction as this, and therefore the Hamiltonian acquires this form, which is known as Landau-Zener model. How do we treat this model analytically? Because I'm mostly interested into analytical treatment, also numerical treatments. So how do we do this treatment analytically? So we simply consider the Hamiltonian and the time-dependent Schrodinger equation. The Hamiltonian in matrix form is this one. Therefore, eliminating with this two-component vector probability, amplitude probability, by eliminating C1 into the equation for C2 or C2 into the equation for C1, we solve kind of higher transcendental equations and get this probability, which is the solvival probability, that is the probability for remaining in this state. If, for instance, the system was prepared here, the probability for it to stay in this state is given by this one. If it was rather prepared in this state, it will still go in this one with the same probability. So the probability for it, for an initial preparation here, to move from here to here is given by this one, which is the transition probability. And the condition of the conservation of probabilities is given by this one. Now, our analytical treatment in general leads to this result. We have C1 for the amplitude, C2 for the amplitude of the state 1, C2 for the amplitude of the state 2, A plus and A minus being these two functions, and then with this initial amplitude. From diabatic to adiabatic basis, the previous treatment is in general applied when the system is fastly driven. Now, if the system is slowly driven, it is recommended to move the system from adiabatic, from this basis to this basis. This is from diabatic basis to the adiabatic basis. How do we do that? We simply transform the vector probability amplitude like this with this rotation vector, where A is simply this vector probability amplitude in the adiabatic basis. So the treatment leads us to this Hamiltonian, where lambda plus, lambda minus, and lambda plus are the eigen energies of the Hamiltonian. And the off-diagonal elements here are the non-adiabatic couplings. For pure adiabatic evolution, we require the system not to go this way, but rather to follow this trajectory. So we want this evolution to be forbidden. So to do that, quantum mechanics tells us that if a system is slowly driven, it remains in the same adiabatic state. So to fulfill then this requirement, we impose that the coupling between states, that is the non-adiabatic coupling, should be less than the splitting between the two states. So when this condition is satisfied, to satisfy this condition in general, it is enough to consider the super adiabatic evolution. So by setting the off-diagonal components of the Hamiltonians to zero, the resulting Hamiltonian is the resulting Schrodinger equation is simply integrated, and we end up with these two expressions for the probability of remaining in the state 1 and this one for the state 5 plus and this one for remaining in the state 5 minus 1. So we have this type of phase accumulated during the adiabatic evolution, and then we also have this quantity which is reminiscent of the eigen energy. Now that we have all these materials on hand, we need also to keep in mind what we call the Zener time scales. So we need to understand how the time scales are in the Landau-Zener model. So as we have seen, when the system is driven, before arriving the crossing, we see that almost nothing happens. So here the system is still at the left of the crossing. The system has not yet achieved the crossing. When it arrives at the crossing, this kind of transition occurs. So you see that the probability abruptly jumps to a maximum value and later on oscillates around an equilibrium, around this position. Yeah. So the Landau-Zener time, or the time of non-adiabatic transition, is simply this time. After passing the crossing here, the system relaxes. The system globally relaxes. And the time of relaxation, which is the time the system, the time of relaxation is globally this one. We have therefore the collision time, one of the time scales, the non-adiabatic time, and the large positive time asymptotic of the probability of the occupation probability is in general given by this expression. Experiments have shown that this expression actually holds at a limited vicinity of the transition of the crossing, so which is not easy for spin manipulations, for instance. So it is people are actually are presently requiring expressions that allow manipulation from a given initial time to a given final time, instead of large negative time for the initial time or the large positive time for the final time. So depending on how the system is driven, the final time of transition is the maximum of these two quantities. So this is found in this paper by Mullen and Ben-Jacob.
How important are these oscillations?
Please?
How important are these oscillations?
Yeah, yes.
So what does it signify?
Yeah, it actually signifies that we have kind of Fresnel oscillations. We have kind of, I wouldn't say interactions, but we have kind of permanent interactions between the upper state and the lower state. So the system always lives between the upper and the down state. So it oscillates this way. Okay. Thank you for your question. So, and those oscillations, yeah, they occur when the Landau-Zener parameter, this is this parameter, is smaller than one. When it is larger as compared to one, we see that the oscillations disappear. We do not longer have those oscillations, because in this case, the system is, the sweep velocity turns to zero, and the system mainly remains in one state. It mainly remains in one state. So the two states do not really communicate. Yeah. So we have that situation.
So oscillation is a characteristic of non-adiabaticity.
Yes, please. That's it. Yeah. Thank you very much. The observation. Okay. So. Okay. Now, what is so exciting about quantum triangles? The fascinating thing with quantum triangles is that we can naturally generate interactions or interferometry between levels. How do we do that? Let's prepare the system. Let's allow the system to start in, for instance, this state. When it arrives at this crossing, it splits into two parts. So we have this splitter. This is therefore a splitter. When the time evolves, the system arrives at this crossing and splits again into two parts. So the two parts splitted, the two parts issued from the splitting recombined. They're recombined here at this mixer. So, and we have observed so far that this is due to the coupling between levels, which is the coupling which has remained constant throughout the evolution of the control parameter. So quantum triangles are interesting for producing interferences, quantum interferometry. And we know quantum interferometry are also very important for high precision measurement and also for preparing both Einstein condensate and manipulating spins in quantum for quantum information processing. Okay. Now, in the triangle, depending on the geometric size of the triangles, two main effects occur. So if the system, let me go back to this slide, if between this crossing, if from here to here, the system has had enough time to relax, then here one Landau-Zener transition will occur, that is those oscillations, and when the system will arrive also here, the same oscillation will occur. We'll have then a double Landau-Zener transition. If, in contrary, the system does not have enough time to relax after passing this point and encounters another crossing, then it will relax when returning to its original adiabatic state, to its original adiabatic state, it will relax by emitting beats. So the two situations are illustrated here. So if the relaxation time, that is the time between two crossing, is less than relaxation time. So If this condition is satisfied from one crossing to another, the system relaxes enough, then if this condition is satisfied and the system does not relax enough between two crossings, it will go, when it returns to its original diabatic state, we will have these beats. And if, in contrary, the system had enough time to relax when going back to its original diabatic state, we will have this kind of two steps. So this was observed in this paper. Okay. Now, the general model for quantum triangles. The general model for quantum triangles is globally this one. Why? This term, the triangle is, the formation of the triangle, this term known as the zero energy splitting term, where D is the uniaxial anisotropy, is in general responsible for the formation of the triangle. I don't know if I can use the pen to the chalk to draw something. So in the absence of this term in the S, in the spin one Landau Zener model, the three states cross this way. The Hamiltonian in general is this one. Now, if we add this zero splitting term, this term creates this shift. Then this level can shift down or shift up. So this term is therefore responsible for the formation of the triangle. So the general model is this one. So far, we have explored only two situations, the situation where the Z component of the magnetic field linearly changes in time, or the situation when it periodically changes in time. So this model is written like this, but it is not, I wouldn't say, universal. It works for quantum triangle forms. Quantum triangles form in these situations for linearly changing longitudinal magnetic field or periodically changing longitudinal magnetic fields. So for instance, for optical lattices, returning to the Bloch, to the experiment of Immanuel Bloch, for optical lattices, we in general need to consider this two-mode Huber model. And then in our work, we have shown that there always exists this set of transformation, which allows us to reduce this model into this one, which looks like our general model for quantum triangle. So where n sigma is the occupation of particle with degree of freedom sigma, and n sigma prime is the operator or the number of the occupation number for the particle with degree of freedom sigma prime. And we have seen that the Casimir operator, which is this one, commutes with all the spins operators here. Then this term here appears as a non-abelian term and can be washed out. Also, at the end of our work, we realized that this model for two entangled qubit, which is also known as the Kibel-Zurek model, can also be reduced to this model. The procedure is shown in our paper. Okay. Now, the correspondence between the SU2 and the SU3 space. So in the SU2 space, we have, the SU2 space is governed by Pauli matrices. We have 3 plus 1 matrices, one being the unit matrix. In the Gell-Mann, in the SU3 space, the SU3 space is governed by Gell-Mann matrices. We have 8 of them plus 1, which is the unit matrix. The Bloch vector in this space is defined like this. The Bloch vector in the other space is defined like this. Oh, it's a typo. Alpha here is no longer the sweep velocity. It's a constant which counts the number of, the matrices, the Pauli matrices. So the Bloch vector is set on the Bloch sphere with this condition. The equation for the density matrix, also known as the Bloch equation for the two pictures, for the two spaces, is given by this one for the SU2 space, this one for the SU3 space. But generally, they all take this form, where the cross product, this one for the SU2 space, is given by this. Epsilon are well known as Levi-Civita symbols. And then for SU3, we have this, and the F are the structural constants on SU2. So they are all given by this and this. A bit Yeah, and then welcome then to the eighth dimensional world for the effective treatment of the quantum triangle. So to do that, let's recall this, the Gell-Mann matrices. These are the Gell-Mann matrices. We have these two special combinations that are given by this, because normally these two are not part of the set of Gell-Mann matrices. Rather, we have from 1 to 7, the 8th matrix is this one. So the matrix form is not shown, but we have this. So we have three combinations, three special combinations of SU2. So the SU3 group can then be approximated, is isomorphic to three SU2 representations. So we have this first combination, this one, and the three SU2 representations are markers, are indicators of this one, this crossing, as we have seen that the evolution here has an SU2 symmetry, the evolution here also, and here also has the same SU2 symmetry. So the global SU3 picture seems to be three independent SU2 pictures. Okay, this is clarified. Because of the complicated structure of Gell-Mann matrices, we had to reduce the eight-dimensional world to a three-dimensional world. We have simply considered these three specific representations of the diagonal components of the density matrix, and we simplified the corresponding Bloch's equation into this set of three equations that are the main equations of our treatment. The function k plus, the functions k and everything are given here. Yeah. Now, we have solved this equation. These equations are solved numerically and analytically. This is the global job we did. We solved these equations numerically and analytically, and we compared the results of the analytical treatment and the result of the numerical treatment. So the function 5 minus and 5 plus, 5, 0, are not relevant in the non-adiabatic limit we are considering. So, yeah, the first numerical result is this one. When the parameter delta, this is the non-adiabatic limit because alpha goes to infinity. Alpha is very large, not that it goes to infinity. So we have these two parameters. When alpha is smaller than 1 and neta is just smaller than 1, we have the formation of bit. What is the period of bit? The period of bit is simply 1 over d. So the same numerical treatment, our numerical treatment has also shown this. When neta now is larger, this is not very large, it should be larger than 1. So we have these two steps, which indicates that the system has relaxed enough between two crossings. And the period of bit, the period of step, is simply d. This distance is simply d, which is the uniaxial anisotropy. So we have generally focused in the occupation of the state 2. So from 2 to 2. Okay. So now, the comparison of analytical and numerical treatment. So this is the first, these are the first results. For very small delta, as we said, and small neta, we have this picture, we have bits, and the dash blue lines here are analytical, are numerical results, while the red solid lines are numerical, are analytical results. We see this kind of agreement between analytical and numerical results. It's the same here, the same picture, the same situation occurs here. So this is globally how the analytical result look like, and the functions p plus and p minus are given by this and that, where f, the function f, is kind of combination of Fresnel functions. So we have this f, we have also j, but g is not present in this result for f, for constant couplings. So the function fxy is described two waves emerging from two different vertices, but interfering at the vertice where this x is equal to 0 and y is equal to 0. They interfere constructively. Here, they do the same, but interfere destructively. Okay. Now, the SU3 Landau-Zener interferometry with transverse drive. All the study we have presented so far was for the case when the function f is constant. Now, if f periodically changes, that is the coupling between level between the levels periodically changes according to this function. The probability from P to 2 still has this form, where now P plus and P minus is this combination of Fresnel of the function F and G. So we already see this kind of Fresnel terms, interferometric terms. We have this cosine and this sine. Now delta is given by this, phi and theta are given, the thetas are given by this, and the phase accumulated during a linear sweep. Yes, so the numerical result, the numerical versus analytical result. So we still have this agreement between the numerical and the analytical result. So in this picture, for D less than square root of V, and the omega of the order of 10, of the order of magnitude of 10 square root of alpha, and omega, here we have these two steps. And then for omega of the order of square root of alpha and D greater than 10 times square root of alpha, we have the coexistence of bits and steps, which is an unexpected result. So we have started at this point, for this, at this result, we have started thinking that there are probably some hidden trajectories that the semi-classical treatment cannot show. That was the first idea we got. So we plotted, we guessed this scenario, and then our quantum treatment revealed that this scenario was actually true. So we confirmed this by our quantum treatment. So why do we have bits and steps in this? We see that if the system starts here and goes this way, when it arrives here, it executes these steps. It starts executing steps. But between two crossings, it does not have enough time to relax. Then it starts also, when performing the steps, it also performs the beats. This is described here. From here, from this region to this next region, the system has enough time to relax before encountering this next crossing. At this crossing, it does this. And then, because of the next crossing it has encountered, then it starts performing beats. And then we have, before returning to its original diabatic state, we have this coexistence of beats and steps. So, yes, please.
This looks like mostly the oscillations.
Yes, yeah. So instead of having pure oscillations, we have oscillations and beats, oscillations and beats, yeah. So, and then in this picture, we have this picture, this situation has actually revealed that we have two separated in time, SU2 Landau-Zener transitions. That is, the system first passes this complete picture, which is the situation I showed on the board there. And then after this region, it goes to this region. So it executes, therefore, these two transitions. So we have two steps. Also, still in the same treatment, we have in this situation when the uniaxial anisotropy matches the frequency of the transverse drive, we have these three steps patterns, D and omega, yeah, these are of the same order of magnitude. And in this situation, if the crossing are well separated in time, we have four crossings here, if the crossing are well separated in time, how do we realize this? We simply allow D and omega to be large, but D larger than omega. I mean, this condition should be satisfied. So when this condition is satisfied, we have these four steps. So we have justified this result with this quantum picture. This is shown, we show how this comes out, yeah. Now, we have seen so far that when the coupling is constant, the steps maximizes to two. When the coupling periodically changes with time, the step maximizes to four. When now, in the coupling, instead of considering not only a static coupling or a periodic coupling, we consider a shifted monochromatic wave, a monochromatic signal. When we consider this situation, we see that the number of steps increases when D is equal to omega. Instead of four steps, now we have one, two, three, four, five steps when D is equal to omega. When D is larger than omega, but both are large, we have these one, two, three, four, five, six steps. So steps are, yeah, we'll give the importance of steps in the next slide. So, yeah. Now, how do we understand these behaviors? So to understand this behavior, what we have done is we have quantized the electric field in a cavity. That is, we have considered a three-level system as confined in a quantum electrodynamic cavity. So the Hamiltonian after quantization has acquired this form, where the energy, the Hamiltonian of the cavity, is simply this two-mode Hamiltonian. So we see here we have this imbalance population between the two modes in the dot in the quantum cavity, quantum electrodynamic cavity. And the interaction between the three-level system and the cavity is given by this one. So now, using a mean field, we have used a mean field approximation indeed. So this is kind of mean field approximation. Therefore, this model, which is an SU3 model, in the basis of these states, takes this form, which has kind of pseudo SU5 symmetry. We are not yet sure that it is not really an SU5 symmetry, but it is kind of pseudo SU5 symmetry.
Enlarge the Hilbert space now.
Please, sir.
You have enlarged the Hilbert space.
Yes.
By bringing photon.
Photons, yeah. This is to justify why, in the semi-classical classical treatment, instead of two steps, as for the constant coupling, now we have four or six steps. Yeah. So we have suspected the electric field to be responsible for some kind of Stark effect, yeah, in addition to the Zeeman effect, which was due to this linear Zeeman field. Now we have this model. So we see from here that if we cancel this line, this column, this row, and this row, please, we have an SU3 model again. Yeah. Now, to confirm that this model actually, this model issued from the quantum treatment works well for our semi-classical treatment, we have therefore compared the two results. So we have here quantum versus semi-classical treatment, which corresponds to an SU3 versus SU5. So the red lines here, red solid lines, are the result of the semi-classical treatment, and the green lines are the result of the quantum treatment. We see this kind of nice agreement between the semi-classical and the classical treatment. Yeah. So the three steps we were able to recover these two-step pattern, coexistence of beat and steps, three steps, and also four steps. Yeah. Okay. Now, we move the study forward by instead of considering a monochromatic signal or a shifted monochromatic signal, we have generalized our study to the case of a polychromatic signal. So the polychromatic signal, we know how important these signals are for experiments. So we have seen that the function P plus and P minus, globally takes this form here, where the cosine and the sines are indicators of interferometry. So the phases psi and phi are the phases accumulated or picked up by the three-level system during a linear sweep. We have here the contribution from all vertices and also contribution from electric field and contribution from the uniaxial anisotropy. Okay, so to confirm how to check the role played by this field, so we have performed this numerical treatment. So we have shown here we are showing an independence of the number of steps. So we see that for n equals to 2, that is two signals in the polychromatic signal, we have this number of steps. For three signals in the polychromatic signal, the number of steps generally increases with the number of signals in the polychromatic signal. Yes. And we still have this agreement between numerical and analytical results. Yes. So the interference pattern, we have seen that when the three-level arrives at the crossing point, it splits into two, first splitter, second splitter, and recombine at the mixer. So what happens? What is the interference pattern? We classically know, for instance, for interference for Jung's experiment, we know that it is important to see the interference pattern. So this is, for constant coupling, we have this kind of interference pattern, which is radically different from what has been observed so far. And when for a strong drive in the picture we have seen, we see that this picture, this interference pattern splits into two. It occurs here two times. It occurs here two times. This was seen in a previous work that in that work we consider it double drive, that is, instead of a linear drive, we consider it a three-level system interacting with two electric fields, a longitudinal and a transverse electric field. So we see that for a double drive, we have this, for a small transverse drive, we have this, and when the transverse drive is very strong, we have this kind of interference pattern. Yes. Now, concluding remark, how are steps important? Let us recall what we have learned so far. We have learned that when in a quantum triangle the coupling are constant, the number of steps maximized to two. When the coupling periodically changes as a monochromatic signal, the number of steps maximized to four. When the coupling periodically changes as a shifted monochromatic signal, the number of steps maximizes to six. When the coupling periodically changes as a polychromatic signal, the number of steps increases with the number n of monochromatic signals composing the main signal. How are steps now important, and how are bits important? So we did not show any slide to explain how steps are important. But then steps are useful for the statistics of atoms in the Bose-Einstein condensate. So let me quickly draw this kind of double well potential. So in this, maybe let's say in this well, we have a given number of atoms. By linearly driving this part, then each time an atom goes from this well to this one, we have one transition. We have one step. So each time an atom goes from here to here, we have one step. So if in a given scenario we have a given number of steps, then we can know the number of atoms that have traversed, that have moved from this step, from this dot, from this well to that one. So steps are therefore important for the statistics of atoms in a Bose-Einstein condensate, because it is important to to know the number of atoms. Bits too are useful markers for manipulating spins and for quantum information processing. Why? Because from the general theory of bits, we know that if for instance an electron gets excited and subjected to many pulses, so to several pulses, and gets to the excited state, when it returns to its original, when it returns to the ground state, it emits bits. And each emission is, according to the Bohr theory, can be associated with a given electromagnetic signal and used for quantum information processing. So thank you very much. I end by thanking some. This is my outlook. So I'm planning to investigate Landau-Zeno interferometry now with dissipation, because so far I've not considered the effect of environment. I'm also planning to consider Landau-Zeno interferometry with longitudinal and transverse drives, both at the same time. The statistics of atoms and in Bose-Einstein condensate is also in the pipe, and the dynamic of two entangled qubits is also in the pipe. The dynamic of two entangled qubits is also in the pipe, and there are many things in the pipe. I end this talk by thanking the two pioneers of the SU3 interferometry, namely the Professor M.N. Kiselev of ICTP, which was my PhD supervisor. He initiated me to this SU3 interferometry, and also Konstantin Kikoin from the University of Tel Aviv, who also introduced me to the use of Gell-Mann matrices, and my two collaborators, A.B. Chabda, and also LC5, who is my PhD supervisor, with whom I'm doing a lot of things. I also thank two institutions, Perimeter Institute and EMS Ghana. Thank you very much. I don't know if there are questions. Yes,
so which scenarios have been experimentally realized?
Yes, thank you for your question. I will go back to this experiment of this experiment by Immanuel Bloch.
Mm-hmm. And so that's a simplest scenario?
Simplest?
Yeah, because you later went on that you had all kinds of outer signals.
I won't say the simplest scenario because I'm not an experimentalist. I don't know how difficult it could be to perform such kind of experiment. But analytically, yeah, since the couplings are constant, I think the treatment are not so complicated as when we have these periodic drives. Yeah. But for the experiment, no, I can't tell.
Yeah. But experimentalists look for guidance from you. What's the decoherence issue?
Yeah.
For example, you know, you have beautiful beats and oscillations,
yeah,
many of them.
Okay.
But in reality, there will be some decoherence issue.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm saying that experimentalists need guidance from you.
I agree with you. That's what I said at the beginning, that due to the rapid growth of nanotechnologies, experimentalists and theorists have to work together. Because the experiment was performed, you see, in 2008, and we came up with this sort of explanation in 2017. So,
see these oscillations and beats.
Yes, please.
And trying to see whether one can get in your semi-classical picture,
yeah,
Lorentz precession,
yeah,
picture. Because eventually, you know, you have a spring model.
Yes, yes.
Spin one.
Yeah.
And suppose you compute the average value of S, X,
yes,
S, Y, S,
yes,
Z.
Yes.
Then you will get some point on the scale.
Yes.
So is that moving along some trajectory and then executing some normal precision?
I think it does that. Yes. I think it does that. But I did not. The semi-classical treatment, I definitely agree with you. The semi-classical treatment starts by considering the dipole moment operator, of the three-level systems, and coupled to the electric field. So this is the contribution of the electric field in the semi-classical treatment.
So it's some complicated normal precision.
Yeah, it is a Larmor. Yeah. We have a dipole moment, yeah, rotating around some center.
Another question I have is, your use of SU3,
yeah,
is a mathematical convenience.
Yes, for this problem, system. Yes. Yeah. If I can say so. It's not just because we have three-level systems. It's because the symmetry, because of the presence of this anisotropy term. Yeah,
there is no manifest, you know, once you have anisotropy, there is only icing symmetry.
I see.
I don't see any SU2 or SU3 symmetry.
Yeah, you can't see it from here.
Mm-hmm.
But we have seen that we can always rotate the space of Gell-Mann matrices. That's what is presented in that work. We can always rotate the space of Gell-Mann matrices into a different basis, which into a different set of Gell-Mann matrices.
There's some approximate symmetry hidden here.
Yes. Because we have kind of non-abelian term, which is ejected, which is neglected because its contribution is, yeah, it's not relevant. Yeah. The contribution is not relevant.
And is it anything to do with dynamical symmetry?
The SU3 group actually is dynamic, but...
No, because here you are imposing time dynamics.
Yes.
You are imposing time dependence.
Yes.
And finding some approximate symmetry on the way.
Yeah.
I was wondering whether anything like a lens vector in the case of hydrogen atom, where you have dynamical symmetry. No.
Yeah.
The last question is, since you use SUN, when you have large number of degenerate levels,
yeah,
then often there are simplifications when n becomes large.
Yes, there are.
So are there such attempts to?
No, not here. Because of the three levels, we were able to obtain that set of three equations. we did not need to do, because it's a semi-classical trash. So we got this. Yeah, we got this set of three coupled integral differential equations, which actually could be solved in the non-adiabatic limit, that is at the limit where the amplitude of these functions is less than one. So we can solve these equations in that limit, because the contribution of these three functions is negligible in that limit. So we did not need to use the case when maybe the number of spins is large, simplify, or use any Bagalyubov, transformation related to Bagalyubov. Yeah, we did not need to use.
Yes. So you talked about quantum information processing applications,
yes,
of these triangle setups.
Yeah.
You also had one slide where you showed this Victoria representation of using this set of levels as an interferometry setup.
Yeah.
Is this related? Is the idea that you can use this triangular setup as a gate
of information? As a gate? No, I won't take it that way. But why have we related this to quantum information? It's simply because we have noticed that if we consider two qubits, qubit being the unit of quantum information, if we entangle two qubits, the Hamiltonian describing that situation is this one. Normally, we have this problem is a four-level problem. But then, in the Hilbert space, we can always eliminate the direction associated with the singlet spin S0, and then reduces this four-level problem to a three-level problem. And this was shown by Professor Laflamme. So we got this picture from him. So they have shown that this Hamiltonian, actually, within that configuration, leads to a quantum triangle.
Well, unless there are any further questions, let's thank faculty again.